This is Kelly Henderson, and you're listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. This week, my guest is Sarah Jane Case. She is the founder of the Enneagram and Coffee podcast and Instagram. I am personally pretty obsessed with learning about the Enneagram personality test and just seeing how each different type reacts and responds to life from their different lenses. It's truly helped me in business and my relationships, and Sarah Jane and I are breaking down the basics of the Enneagram and just why it works. She's also helping me to understand all the different facets, which there are a lot of different facets to this test, and just where to go to learn more. So here's our conversation. Okay, so I need to hear about Enneagram and coffee because you started this social media site and this podcast, and within a year you have over half a million followers.
Yeah, it's
insane.
It's crazy. It really took me by surprise too. I thought I was going to make this account for my mom.
Yeah.
And my husband to follow, and no one else is going to be interested. Yeah, it blew up, and it went from 0 to 100,000 in 3 days. So it was watching the Super Bowl. Yeah.
So what were you even posting? Did it just go viral?
It went viral. Yeah. The first thing that really took off was I did bingo cards for each type.
Can you explain what that is for people who might not follow you yet?
Yeah, totally. So essentially it's just, I just made like a replica of a typical bingo card and then put the number in the center and then put stereotypes of each number in the boxes. And because at this time I wasn't thinking anyone would see it, I was just making it for fun. And people just ran with it and took them and shared them. And I think it comes from that place of wanting to be seen. So it's I see myself in this and I want other people to see me too. And it just, people were sharing it in their stories and it just went crazy.
So we mentioned that you have a podcast, and I was listening to one of them where you talked about just what that felt like and growing so fast, how great it was, but also some of the hard things that can come from that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's interesting because I think I would have thought before when I saw other people go through this, your entire life is different now.
Yeah.
And what it really felt like for me on the back end was just kind of panic. there's a lot of crying, and because it kind of felt like my energetic boundaries were being stretched to hold space for people at a rapid pace.
Yeah.
That I hadn't, I hadn't prepared for. It wasn't a slow integration. It was a rapid shift in how many people were watching me and seeing me and, judging me and thinking about me. It was really intimidating, honestly.
So what did you do before? Because were you in some sort of business consulting kind of thing?
Yeah, I was working with business owners and primarily helping them to kind of maintain that creative spark, work with through burnout or prevent burnout, recover from it, to really create businesses that served the lifestyle they wanted to live instead of letting their business dictate that. And I was using the Enneagram a significant amount in the last few years of doing that business, but really just trying to get to know business owners and help them to edit their businesses down.
So when you say you were using the Enneagram, what do you mean?
Yeah, so before I knew the Enneagram, what I would do is I would get to know that person, right? I would say, well, what drives you? What motivates you? What demotivates you? Where are you losing momentum? Once I found the Enneagram, I was able to help them see the areas in which they were motivated or demotivated that they may not have even realized. Because I think the Enneagram is one of my favorite teachers, she teaches it. She says the Enneagram is the water you're swimming in. And so you don't always know you're in it.
And so the Enneagram is so interesting.
Yeah. So it let me get to depths with people relatively quickly that I wouldn't have been able to get to otherwise.
You mentioned earlier about people really being drawn to your Instagram because maybe it was the thing of being seen. Do you think that is why we have such a fascination with the Enneagram right now?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I think culturally we're in an era where we're demanding a lot of personal responsibility from people and from ourselves. And the Enneagram's straightforward, here's your stuff and here's what you need to be looking at. And so I think partially, we want to be seen, we want to be known. And I think also we want to take responsibility for what we're bringing to the table, and we want other people to do the same.
So I do want to talk about how you used it specifically more in your businesses, but let's do a little breakdown, because I will tell you this, I have been studying, you know, or just I've taken the test, I've read some books, I don't know if studying is exactly the right word, but I've been aware of the Enneagram for a couple years now. And the more I dig into it, sometimes the more confused I get.
Yeah.
There's so many different like wings and subtypes. It just never seems to stop with the learning.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And there's so many different schools of teaching and ways that people talk about it that it can be, there's a lot of opinions in the Enneagram.
That what makes do you it mean? Tricky.
Like one teacher might teach line, like the lines of integration, disintegration. I teach lines of stress and rest. You know, I know people who teach it as stretch and release, and they all have kind of slightly different variations of the way they discuss it and talk about it, which I think can be really disorienting.
Yes. Okay. So let's like break it down for people. So there's 9 types on the Enneagram, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Give us the basics.
Yeah. So the way I like to talk about it is that the Enneagram, when you find your Enneagram type, you're essentially discovering the story that you tell yourself about who you have to be in order to be okay, in order to be loved, in order to be safe.
Okay.
So each number is driven by a different basic motivation, a different basic fear, and a different story that they believe they have to be in order to be okay. And within that, so that's the basic structure. And within that, you have wings, which is the number on either side. So the Enneagram symbol is a circle, and it's numbered 1 through 9. And on either side is your wings. So these, you have both wings available to you at any time, but most of us kind of lean into one or the other. So what that means is the numbers on either side of your number have you pull in the characteristics and the strengths and the weaknesses from those numbers as well. Most of the time we have a dominant, but some people are kind of balanced out.
So when you say balanced out, I was going to ask you that, like you can you show both sides? Like I'm a 4. Which I know your husband is, because I've been listening to your podcast. So I have lots of questions about that. But so if I'm a 4, you know, there's some days where I definitely identify with a lot of the characteristics of a 3. But could I still pick up some stuff from a 5 as well?
For sure. And likely, you know, that dominant wing is pretty prevalent for a lot of people. But you can intentionally pull in those skills of a 5 as a way to kind of intentionally balance them out. Because there's a school of belief that I am a fan of that says that the goal is to have balanced wings, because the number on either side of you can really offer you a lot to round out the strengths and weaknesses of your personality. So for a 4, the 3s are very action oriented. They're very good at taking action on the things they think about. So that probably serves you well. And then the side of 5 is that there's a lot of like deep integrative knowledge that you can pull in as a 5, a lot of observing, a lot of not reacting to emotions or feelings, but instead processing them and thinking through them and using logic to balance them out. And all of that's useful to a 4.
So you have your specific personality type, which mine is a 4, like I'm saying, but I can pick up characteristics of both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So now let's talk about you mentioned, was it stress and how do you interpret it?
Stress and rest.
Stress and rest. Okay. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I think this is my favorite element of the Enneagram, and probably because it's the most action oriented in my mind. So essentially, each number goes to a different number in a season of stress or a season of rest. So your number might goes to type 2 in stress. Mm-hmm. And so what that can look like is you show up in the lower level types, like behaviors of type 2, when you're stressed out. Another way to think about it is that if you start, a lot of times we see another number and we think we're supposed to act like that number according to like society or expectations. So, and then by trying to live as that number, it can be really stressful for you. So a 4 trying to constantly live as a 2 is going to be a really stressful experience. or it's an indicator that you need self-care.
Yes, that makes, because for me, when I get stressed out, for some reason, I tend to start taking care of everyone else, like worrying about everyone else's needs. And I think that is a two, right? The helper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is super draining for me.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't feed you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. And what's interesting to me is the belief that you can climb up any of those lines or slide down either of those lines. So you can actually intentionally, regularly pull in some of the high side of two, which is going to be like thinking about other people, like, more often, really asking good questions, integrating that love and that warmth, that like community relational side of a two into your everyday life, which can actually prevent you from getting to those low level behaviors of a type two.
Of the type two.
Yeah, in that stress state.
So how would you pull on that if you're not in your stress though?
Yeah, so it would be more intentional. Another way to think about this, let's take it out of you and put it into a different person. So as a type seven, I go to type one in stress.
Okay.
So the low level indicators, right, that I need some self-care or like I get perfectionistic, I get judgmental. But if I can regularly integrate the high level behaviors of type one, like organization, structure, being like high-minded, like thinking ethically, then I can every day make a little bit better decisions that serve my stress levels in the long term.
Okay. So you're just aware of it. And so then you can pull out and draw from that positive part of it. So every number has, like, for instance, I have a friend who is an eight, and she, when she found out she was an eight, she was devastated because she was reading some of the harder characteristics of an eight and she can't get, and I kind of feel that way about the four. I think that's a very typical thing. You see the bad parts of it, but every number has strong characteristics or positive traits and maybe some negative ones too, correct?
Correct. And I think it's the most common experience to read your number and think you got the bad one.
Yeah.
and I think the work really is recognizing that every single number has shadow and every single number has light. There's no good. There's no bad. We're just all human.
Okay. And so it's really more about learning, or this is what I'm taking from the Enneagram lately, at least, is it's about learning how you react and respond to certain situations so that you can become your higher self, and like knowing what your triggers are, like you said, maybe what your fears are coming from, what the story in your head is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about recognizing what you think you have to be, but you don't have to be. So as a seven, I think I have to be free. I have to get what I want all the time. I have to have options available to me, but it's about unlearning that and recognizing that I'm actually okay if those things don't happen, I'm still fine. And the same thing for eights. Eights really fear being controlled or not being in control, and that can exhibit in multiple ways, but it's actually like it's just about deciding you don't have to do that or be that.
I found it so interesting to listen to the podcast you did with your husband, because a four and a seven seems very different to me.
Yeah.
So you kind of just touched on that, but you talked about like fours were very intense in our emotions and our feelings, and how sometimes you could be in a room with him and think that you were going to get sucked into his emotions. Mm-hmm. And so that's something you've learned, right? How to tell yourself that is not happening.
Yes, and that's mine, right? Like, it's not his job to make me feel better about that. It's my job to own that I have that fear.
That is interesting. So are there certain numbers that do better in relationship with each other than others?
I honestly believe that any number can be together. It's really just about if you're willing to do the work. I think it's just in anything, if you're on the higher average to high level health of your number, it's going to be a lot easier to be in relationship in general, versus if you're not paying attention, if you're not aware, then it's going to be trickier no matter what number you're with.
Right. Okay. So we talked about the wings, but then there's also subtypes. This is where I start to be like, what? There's so many different things, parts of the Enneagram. So you say that subtypes are actually more important to know about than your wings.
I believe so, yeah.
Why?
Because I think they offer more distinction.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, just like you can meet you, Kelly, as a type 4, and then I can meet my husband as a type 4, and you're going to be very different and very and part of that, you know, you're going to have your unique flavor. Right. And I think that the flavor of the subtype is actually way more intricate and in-depth, because it's the subtypes are essentially your survival mechanism. It's what you think you have to do to survive. So that could be like procreation or intimacy. It can be having a social network, being socially accepted, and it can be having like all the food and warmth and safety that you need. And that's really deeply, just as deeply ingrained as your worldview, if not more, and can really intensely flavor the way you're going to show up as your number.
So how do you figure out your subtype?
That's one of the things. Yeah, that's one of the things that's so tricky in the Enneagram, because different schools do teach it differently.
Right.
I'm personally a fan of the work of Beatrice Chestnut, because she's given us very distinct descriptors of each number. In each subtype of each number. So I encourage you guys to read her book, The Complete Enneagram.
Okay.
It breaks down all of the numbers really beautifully and all of their subtypes.
So there's 27 subtypes. Is that right?
Yes, 27 subtypes. Okay. And actually, some of our earlier teachers, when they brought the Enneagram to the mainstream, they taught it as their 27 types, not just 9 types.
Oh, I see. And so then it got a little more specific. I was reading, I took the I-9 Enneagram test, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have, you know, a pretty extensive breakdown of, I love how that's Ian Morgan Cron, and that's how he completely breaks down how you react in certain situations, why you're, what you're driven by. And I'm reading right now on one of my sheets, but he's talking about like, I'm a social 4.
Mm-hmm.
So is that my subtype?
Yes, that's your subtype.
That's a subtype. Okay, so what are some other examples of subtypes or different definitions of that?
Yeah, so there's three. If we all have all three subtypes, it's just that which one's dominant. So
okay.
The different types, so there's one-to-one, which just means that you value like one-to-one connection and one-to-one intimacy. And then there's social, which just means that you really, it's important to you to fit into the social order, to know where you stand in the social order. And then we have self-preservation, which means you want to be safe, you want to be fed, you want to have everything you need in order to feel like you're going to survive. Like that's your plan for survival, essentially. And we all have all three, we all need all three, but usually one kind of rises to the surface as our dominant.
So like what would a difference be between a number that's a social number and then one that's like a self-pres? Like what are your reactions to life, or how are they different?
Mm-hmm. So I can talk about fours if that's comfortable for you.
Sure.
Okay, so a social 4 is going to be a little bit more internal. So they're going to be more aware of where they stand in like the stacking of things. So if they fit into the social order, if they don't fit in, and that can create a little bit of hyper self-awareness for the 4, and often can have them like kind of holding on to the negatives that people say about them and not holding on to the positive things that get said about them. So a lot of the
I'm
work
laughing
is like,
because it's so true for me. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the work is really believing that you're wanted and valued and that people see the good in you.
Mm-hmm.
And then for our self-preservation fours, they actually are the counter type. So what that means is they show up differently in behavior than they show up in, even though they have the same motivations, the same beliefs, the same worldview, their behavior might be different. So while a social 4 might be very comfortable with suffering and not feel like they need to escape it, a self-preservation 4 is going to want to prove that they can suffer and still be happy. So they're going to look a little bit more like jovial, a little bit more light. They can get mistyped as a 7 because that's why you meet like very sunshiny 4s and people are like, you're not a 4.
Yeah.
Although they might be the counter type. They might be a self-pres 4 whose main mission is to prove that they can suffer and be resilient. And then we have the 1-to-1 4, which is a lot more intense, a lot more fiery, might lead with like what looks like anger. They might be a little bit more revenge oriented and really feel like they're suffering and they want other people to suffer too.
Do you find that people mistype themselves a lot? Because you just said something about like a self-preservation 4 might look like a 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And honestly though, I think that gets messiest when other people try to speak into your typing process.
What do you mean? Because,
like, when most people, I think, when they read through the numbers, can get a general idea of who they are pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But then when other people come in, so like a self-preservation 4, reading type 4 might see themselves in it pretty clearly. But then someone else will be like, well, you don't seem like a 4 because you're really happy. Because they have like a very base knowledge of the Enneagram, and they don't quite understand the complexity that can live in it.
Right.
And so that can create confusion for people. So if you think like, I resonate with type 4, but everyone's telling me I'm not, then you might explore a bunch of different numbers until, you know, you finally get the validation that you are in the right place.
Well, I actually, when I first took the Enneagram test, I took like, I think a free one online or something, and I got a 2. And mm-hmm. I just kept being like, you know, there's definitely parts of a 2 I identify with, but I just kept feeling that thing of like, this just doesn't fully feel like me.
Totally.
And it wasn't until I recently took this new, the I-9 test, that it's just so much more extensive. And then when I read the breakdown of the 4, even the bad stuff, I was like, that is so me. Like, I couldn't deny it, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's actually pretty common to mistype on, especially those free tests, because they're asking you about kind of social norm things. Like, do you think it's important to care about people?
Right.
Do you think it's important to be helpful? And so we're gonna say yes.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, like my mom said to, so.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to be a monster.
Right. And so that gets really confusing. And that's why I really love the IEQ9, because it's 95% accurate. They ask you questions in like a myriad of different ways. Mm-hmm. They reorganize them, and you really get a full on report of your number, which is pretty cool.
You just said it correctly. I've been saying I-9. It's IQ-9, and you can find it. I think it's on, is it Ian Morgan Cron? Is that how you say his last name? .com.
Yeah.
He has a really good book too called The Road Back to You that it taught me a lot about the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Okay. So, then I want to also talk about, like, in the breakdown of the numbers, like, I know the 2, the 3, and the 4, what we operate from a heart place. Is that right? And can you talk about those different breakdowns? I obviously don't know specifically the breakdown of the numbers, but there's different places that we come from with all of our emotions and the way we navigate through life, right?
Yeah. So the 2, 3, and 4 are in the image triad, which essentially means you're aware of how you're being perceived and have an idea of how you would like to be perceived. So type 2s want to be seen as lovable and likable. Type 3s want to be seen as successful. Type 4s want to be seen exactly how they see themselves. And then we have types 5, 6, and 7, which are in the anxiety triad. So they kind of lead with thought, lead with, overthinking things, mm-hmm. tend to live in their heads. And then 8, 9, and 1 are in the anger triad, and they have a complex relationship to anger. So maybe they lead with anger, maybe they repress anger, maybe they, you know, become passive aggressive because they try to put their anger to the side.
Okay, this is interesting, because in my life, I keep bumping up against 8s, and mm-hmm. in multiple different places in my life, that is a difficult relationship for me. But is this what you're saying about, like, it's an awareness thing? And so, like, is that just like my number and the number 8 are just going to kind of butt heads all the time?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I think for me, it's interesting because I find 8s really relaxing to be around.
Uh-huh.
And I can see the natural conflict in a 4 and an 8, because as a 7, I value, or as me, I value when I know where I stand with someone. So if an 8 is like, I don't like you, I'm like, oh, thank you. I know. Uh-huh. I don't have to worry about it. And it doesn't really harm me, right? It doesn't hurt me to be told someone doesn't enjoy my company. In fact, it relaxes me, because I trust that if you want to be with me, you will. And if you don't, you won't.
Right.
Whereas I think for 4s, they tend to be a lot more tender to feedback. And so when you're interacting with someone who has very strong opinions and will tell you them without cushioning them or softening them, when you're someone who's going to hold on to all of the harmful things that get said to you and release all the positive, you have kind of like a natural emptying cup, right? Like so when you are around people who are going to give it to you straight and aren't softening that, it can be really hard, I imagine.
Right. And you we focus on the one negative versus the,
yes,
or the, my type of a four does.
Yeah. And versus like 100 positive comments that come your way.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's like a huge thing for me on social media is I can have all this positivity and one, mm-hmm, one hater, and I can only think about the hater. I've had to really learn how to not focus on that.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you feel like the Enneagram just in general has affected your life or the people around you's life?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. You know this about me. Like, I've been sick for a while. Like, I had the flu and it turned into pneumonia, mm-hmm, and I'm still in recovery. It's been like 2 months. And I say that to say that it's been really interesting to see what I thought I had to be in order to be loved. You know, the stories that I had around, you know, if I'm not happy, if I'm not the joy in the room, if I'm not the sunshine, then will people in my life still want to be around me?
Oh, wow.
And the work of the Enneagram has given me the language to say to my husband, like literally ask him, like, are you okay that I'm not happy right now? Are you going to be comfortable if I'm not smiling at you today? Just because I feel so crummy, I don't have much more to give.
Right.
And I don't think I could have pre-Enneagram had the understanding of myself well enough to know that that's even what was coming up. I think I would have just been really defensive, really reactive, kind of closed him off as a self-defense mechanism. But now I have the awareness of like, oh, I feel vulnerable. I feel like I can't be what I'm supposed to be. It just gives us so much insight and language to what maybe we might not have known otherwise.
That is so fascinating. So what did you do? Like when you've been sick, how did you act any differently? Or did you just allow yourself to be?
Yeah. So as most sevens, we have this feeling that we have to constantly be entertaining ourselves,
yeah,
and constantly be busy. And I don't like to sit still very much, but when you have pneumonia, you, right, don't really have much of a choice. And so it really allowed me when I rested really intentionally because I knew I'm going to be very tempted to not take rest, to not enjoy the experience of rest. So I had to intentionally make myself enjoy the process of what it feels like to be restful, for what my home feels like, how it feels to be in this space. And then also just express anytime I felt discomfort around not being happy or excited or, you know, a delight to be around, I would just communicate with my husband and say, hey, do you still love me even though I'm not a delight to be around right now?
Right.
And he could have the opportunity to say, yes, of course. And I think for so long, I didn't feel like I could or know how to even ask that question.
Did you find a difference in how, like, I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but like, did he have a difficult time processing you in that capacity because he's so used to you being a certain way?
Yeah. So for him, because his type pattern gets triggered, for him, he assumed every time I was upset, it was with him.
Right.
And that he had done something. And so it was interesting because he got really good at asking, are you upset with me? Or like, what's going on with you? And then I could say like, no, you've been a perfect angel. Like he literally was a perfect angel. Like took care of everything. Like,
yeah.
Like the idea of me being mad at him in that moment is like inconceivable because he was keeping me alive, you know,
right.
Eating me, like everything. And so it was interesting for me to see that come up in him, to even think for a second that I would have any negative thoughts about him in the time that I loved him the most. So we were able to kind of get underneath those layers and have the real conversation.
Right. Which is just so interesting to think about. If we don't have this awareness about our personalities or where we're coming from, it's just to think of all the miscommunications that could happen in a relationship,
right,
because of that.
Yeah. Because you don't know why, you, uh-huh, know, people are doing what they're doing or why you're even doing what you're doing.
Yeah. That's been one of the big things too. I love this breakdown that I got after I took that test because it talks about, you know, how you would perceive certain things in stress or how you might respond to certain situations in business or in a love relationship. And that's been super helpful to me because, you know, I think so many times I can only speak for myself, but I'm looking at the world through my lenses and I can't process how someone else is lens could be different.
Right. Yeah.
So I just get frustrated. You know, you're like, wait, but how can you not see it this way or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. Because it's how you see it.
Yeah. You know, there's type one kind of gets a bad rap for being judgmental.
Uh-huh.
And I actually heard a type one say recently, they're like, you know, my whole life, I thought that my inner critic was the voice of God and that everyone else was just disobeying.
Wow.
And I was like, that's the most powerful concept I've heard, because I think that that, like, they thought like, oh, you guys are just choosing
right
to not do the right thing.
Wow.
And that's eye-opening.
It's super eye-opening, because I think we all have the stories in our head. So, yeah, you can make up whatever it is you want about another person based off of your perception. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as a person who has obviously studied the Enneagram a ton, what do you do now to keep learning? Like, where are you going? What kind of resources are you finding?
Yeah. So I am just like, I'm so into the Enneagram that I read every book that I can.
Yeah.
That's been written or gets written. I did a certification through the Integrative 9. They're more business based.
Okay.
And then, I'm going through the process of getting a second through the narrative tradition, the narrative school of the Enneagram. And they're a lot more holistic, a lot more somatic, and a little bit more personal about it. So like relational and, you know, reaching that higher self side of things.
Yeah. One of the things I loved, I did mention Sarah Jane has a podcast called Enneagram and Coffee, and you also really tie in a lot of like business, the ways that people would respond in business situations, or I like the ones about the entrepreneur stuff, because even just finding like your motivation and what's going to help you to get up and like get going, which for each different type is completely different.
Yeah. I think like one of my greatest passions is releasing the shame that can happen as entrepreneurs, especially in this creative market where so many of us are entering into entrepreneurship. There's so much belief around what an entrepreneur should be. And there's so many fears and motivations and things that get in the way of the ability to show up as like whatever this ideal is that I don't think anyone's actually doing. So I really want to kind of break down those ideals and get honest about what you want and how that works.
So what do you feel like the perception of what an entrepreneur should be doing is?
Everything. You know, yeah. I think like people go to these conferences and you listen to, you know, speakers like me tell you how you're supposed to run your business. And then you try to apply the tools and tricks that everyone there taught, even though they're teaching from their perspective.
Right.
And most people, they kind of give their authority of their business over to these people that they're learning from, instead of really filtering through, well, what serves me? What do I need? Which things can I let go and which things can I hold on to? Instead, they go home, they try to implement everything that they learned and ultimately end up implementing nothing and then just feel like they failed.
Something that I've been learning, the more I've learned about my number and what drives me, is to surround myself with, you know, the people that I work with around me, who can really tap into maybe the strengths that my number doesn't get to, you know, like to make the business run successfully.
Totally. Yes. I love that.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
Valuing. I think sometimes too, when we hire people, especially we hire people who are different than us to do that. And then we don't value what they bring to the table because it triggers our type pattern.
Right. That is interesting. So do you have recommendations for people who may be just starting out or who are like, what did y'all just talk about? What are all these numbers? Like, what's a, you know, Enneagram for Dummies kind of route to go?
Yeah. So, you know, I really encourage people to go to, I think Enneagram Institute has just the most beautiful write-ups of each number. The most, like, they're very thorough, very thought out. So you can go to EnneagramInstitute.com. Read up on the numbers, see which ones resonate to you the most. And then also the test, the IEQ-9 is the best test. It's 95% accurate. And it really is just, if you want to take a test and get a write up, that's the one to take.
Okay. That's a great place to start. It's the one that I took and really helped me. I felt like I was living in like a, Enneagram personality crisis for many years because I just was like, I don't think I'm a two, but this keeps saying I'm a two.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I typed as a two. It took me
years. Did you really?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and you're a seven. That's so different.
It is so different. Yeah. I was like, oh, I wish I was a two because then I wouldn't have to deal with any of my actual stuff.
Oh, I've read that too, that a lot of us, we will, if you like your type when you get the number, it's probably not your type. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. When I got four, I was like, oh my God. Because we get a bad rap for being so moody, right? Or just so emotional.
All of your emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. Very true. But working on it.
Sarah, I love it.
Thank you so much for being here, Sarah Jane.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was so fun.
And you guys can check her out on Instagram. Are you on other social medias as Enneagram and Coffee as well?
The Instagram and the podcast are where most of the action happens, for sure.
Okay. And I love the little breakdowns you do on your Instagram. Like, it'll be a different theme and you break down how each number would respond to that situation. It's such a good little daily thing. I love.
Thanks.
You guys check her out. And again, thank you so much. I hope everyone finds their true Enneagram number. Thanks for listening. This is Kelly Henderson, and you've been listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. I truly believe that every one of us has a little velvet and a little edge. So it's so important to remember that to be strong, you must be soft too. Thank you so much for sharing in those stories with me. You can follow Velvet's Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as velvetsedge.com. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me every Wednesday for more conversations on lifestyle, beauty, and relationships. Thanks for listening.